Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Here we go on a Wednesday night. Welcome in. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line. It is great to have you with us tonight. Full two-hour program. You're going to get a bunch of these. We're going to do three straight nights of full two-hour programs. We're going to be with you tomorrow and Friday as well because the Cardinals play another day game on Friday after being off coming up tomorrow. So it's great to be with you. We got a lot to get to. As always, if you want to join in on the program, you can call, text, you can tweet. You can also leave a message for us on our video stream that we've got going on. For those of you who are watching on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, wherever you happen to be listening. So listening slash watching. So wherever you want to comment from, we are here for you to call or text. The phone number is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, to tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. And if you, which one did I miss out on there? The message on YouTube or wherever you happen to be watching as well. This is what we've got coming up today from a guest standpoint. We're going to be joined by the TV voice of the St. Louis Blues, of your St. Louis Blues, of the St. Louis Blues, who have won 10 straight games and are a borderline lock for the playoffs at this point. I said that out loud? They are looking so, so incredible right now. It's a tied, late in games, down late in games, doesn't matter. They're going to find a goal. They're going to do what they need to do. It's been so special to watch this run. It's so much fun. And John Kelly's going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes or so on the program. Our good friend Ryan Fagan, longtime baseball writer. He's now part of the team over at Sports Hub STL. He's going to join us at about 6:40. Next hour, we'll talk with our guy Earl Austin Jr. And we'll get some insight on him from him on what's going on right now with the players that the Billikens are bringing in. And also, we'll just kind of put a bow. I don't think we've talked to Earl since the Billiken season has come to an end. And sometimes it's good to take a beat or two before when a season ends and then start to reflect. So we'll do some reflection with Earl Austin Jr. coming up later on as well. As always, we are here to talk with you, so we'll give you an opportunity to chime in on the Cardinals. I always say when we have these weekday day games where we don't really do as much phone calls and things like that during the extra inning show, we always try to hold that for Sports Open Line, so we will open the phone lines coming up later on. We'll go much deep. This is going to be a very surface level thing that I give you right here. We'll go a little deeper later on the program. General thoughts on the Cardinals 4-2 start. I think 4-2 looks fine. If somebody would have come to me before the season got started and said, how would you feel about the Cardinals being 4-2 after their first six? I'd say, that's great. Awesome. Let's do it. If somebody would have said to me, how would you feel about the Cardinals being 4-2 and each of their two losses came in extra innings where they had opportunities to win those games, I would again be very enthusiastic about that scenario. And I think I still am enthusiastic about that start. I think it's been a really good start for the club. This is the only thing I would say. I'm not trying to pour water on anything. The margin of error for this team, that line is so small, so incredibly small when it comes to the margin. And we've already seen some moments in their two extra inning losses where if they make a play, if they come up with a hit, maybe if a different decision is made, like I'm not like angry or upset about anything because again, 4-2 is 4-2 and baseball happens and you're going to lose some games and in tough ways. And you're not always going to come through in big moments. Like that's just part of baseball. And if you're overly upset about those things, well then it's going to be a really long 162 games for you to live through. But I think what is confirmed is that this team is more often than not going to have to make those plays because they are, you know, the old everybody wins 60, everybody loses 60 thing. There's 40 games that make your season. Well, every single time the Cardinals lose a game that I feel like they could have won, it's like, well, there's one of those damn 40 games that went in the wrong direction. And that's kind of what I was feeling, especially with the first game of this Angels series, that there were opportunities for the team to win that game. Now, if I'm talking out both sides of my mouth, maybe that's not one of the 40. Maybe that's just one of the 60 that you're going to lose, and you just experience losses like that, and that's just part of this, you know, of the season of baseball. And honestly, that's probably more true than not. I just know that I think this team has a ceiling of being a team that can contend for a division title. That is their ceiling. And I really want them to be in that area. I think that there's enough fun, cool pieces on this team. This was a fun 6 days of baseball. I don't care. I don't think you can argue that. To me, that is an inarguable point. And I guess anybody can argue anything. This is sports radio. But How do you walk away from those six games of baseball and not say, okay, this team could be fun? You saw a lot of things. I mean, the storylines, the narratives that have gone along with all these, you always try to tell the story of the game. What was the story of the game today? It was a day where you thought when Sonny Gray was maybe left in one batter too long that was going to be the end of it and you were going to get swept by the Angels and it was going to feel like everything that you accomplished in the Twin Series was just completely wiped away because you follow that up by being swept by the Angels. And then what does the team do? They come out and tie it. But of course, they have an opportunity to take the lead and they don't. And that harkens you back to what happened the day before and the 2 days before where there were opportunities that were left on the table. And you're going, okay, is this going to be that team that just can't come up with that big hit to take the lead? They're always going to fight back. They're going to tie games, but they're not going to find that big hit, those big runs. And then the next inning, it's a 7-run inning where the Cardinals just go off and they turn it into a laugher. That's the story of today's game. It's a fun game. If we go through the story of the game for each of the first six, it's been a lot of fun day after day after day. More of that coming up later on. We'll continue to talk Cardinals baseball. We'll talk Blues hockey as John Kelly's going to join us in just a moment or so. He is the TV play-by-play announcer for your St. Louis Blues. He joins us in just a moment right here on KMOX. I am starting to run out of adjectives to describe what is going on with the St. Louis Blues. Luckily, our next guest, it's his job to have those type of adjectives, and he does a fantastic job with that and much, much more. He is the TV voice of the St. Louis Blues. He is John Kelly. John, thanks so much for taking this time with us. We really appreciate it. 10 straight wins. How do you describe and what has it been like as you have had a front row seat watching this Blues team do what they're doing right now?
Yeah, it's been incredible, especially considering, Matt, at the break they were 8 points out of a playoff spot. And about 5 weeks ago, they had around a 4% chance of making the playoffs. And I checked today after last night's win, and that percentage now to make the playoffs is about 88%. So it just goes to show you in sports, you just never know. But they played a tremendous team game in the last 6 weeks, really. Since the break, they've only lost two games in regulation. So, you know, what's it like for me as an announcer? Well, really, I'm a fan like a lot of people. And it's sort of like a great playoff run. Every night it's exhilarating. They're winning games different ways. Last night, of course, they tied the game with 30 seconds left or so and then won on the goal by Fowler. So they've come from behind a few times, but for the most part, they've really controlled games and have had leads. But lately they haven't had leads, at least not a lot. And they're still finding ways to win, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we've talked so much about like Broberg and Holloway and how those moves were incredible moves, but going out and getting a guy like Cam Fowler, who scores the game winner yesterday, it seems like his game has been reinvigorated since he's joined the team, but there's been a lot of like small things like that that have really led to this team getting to this point, and Fowler's a guy who's been a big-time contributor since arriving.
Yeah, it's a case where Cam Fowler, I think, probably got a little stale in Anaheim all those years, and lately that team has not been very good. And since coming to the Blues, he has been fantastic. I mean, his ninth goal last night with the Blues, the overtime winner. And he's the number one defenseman right now on this team without Parayko. So you make the trade and you give up a prospect that's in the East Coast League and a second-round pick for a guy that's also under contract for one more year. So, you know, Doug Armstrong did a fantastic job of identifying a need because at the time Nick Leddy was out with an upper body injury and the Blues weren't sure when he could come back. As it turns out, Leddy missed 49 games and, of course, is back and playing really well. But there was no guarantee at the time that he was going to return. And that's a big reason why they made the trade for Cam Fowler. And quite honestly, I think that he has been even better than expected because he has been just tremendous. And when Parayko gets back, and he should be back hopefully before the end of the regular season, those two are going to form one of the very best defensive pairs in the NHL.
Jordan Kyrou gets to his 32nd goal, and maybe we're not talking about it as much. Like, his plus minus in his career, he's had some tough plus minus years. He's a plus 22. So can you speak to just what he has done from a complete game perspective? He's more than just a goal scorer. He is contributing in other ways as well.
Well, I think that his overall game has certainly grown a lot, and especially since the coaching change with Jim Montgomery. I think he's really worked hard on his reloads, back checking, his neutral zone play, not making costly turnovers and things like that. So he's grown as a player, and good for him. He's always had the skill. He's one of the fastest skaters in the NHL, as we know. So he is becoming a more complete player. I mean, in overtime last night, he had a big-time hit that led to a turnover, and the Blues then got the puck, and it wasn't long after that they scored the goal. So he's not known as a physical player, of course, but he right now is playing, I think, his best two-way hockey of his young career, and that's fantastic to see.
John Kelly, the TV voice of the St. Louis Blues, continuing to join us. We've gone this entire conversation without me having a question about Jim Montgomery, but he got here and there was that initial coach bump, and then the team kind of fell back into what they had been, kind of that roller coaster ride, and you thought maybe it just wasn't going to happen this year, but he was still going to be a guy who's going to be big, you know, obviously the right coach moving forward. It maybe took a little longer than everybody expected for his system and his impact to go in. Was it just the fact that, you know, with the Four Nations break, they got a little bit of time? Like, what do you think leads to eventually what we're seeing right now? Not so much the 10 straight wins, but just the quality of play that we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard question, Matt. I think one thing, you know, he took over in late November, and the Blues had a rugged schedule in December. They had a couple of long road trips and a lot of games at home. And quite honestly, it was one of the busiest schedules I've ever seen as an announcer covering a team. So he didn't have much practice time at all in December. And then, you know, things got better in January as far as practice time. And then they had the break. And I've been told that the team had some meetings, you know, maybe tweaked their forecheck a little bit and some things like that. But really, the whole team got on the same page. and coming out of that break, and guys, of course, got some rest and recovery. You know, Buchnevich was battling some injuries and things like that. And they just were a determined team out of the break. And they've only lost two games in regulation since the Four Nations face-off tournament. So I don't think it was really one thing or, you know, one big speech by Jim Montgomery. It was just a case of the players resetting, all getting on the same page, and their team play has been exemplary in the last 6 weeks. It's really amazing to see.
In a perfect world, you'd like the playoffs to be starting tomorrow, just the way they're playing. There's still six more games to go. There's still a couple weeks left here in the regular season. Is it a challenge, do you think, for the team to continue to have that edge, to continue to play at this high level, not just to finish the regular season strong, which they still need to do? The playoffs are not a guarantee, but for also them to take this level of play eventually, hopefully, into the postseason.
Yeah, you know, Matt, number one, they haven't clinched anything. I mean, they're 7 points ahead of Calgary, but Calgary has two games in hand, and the Blues have some tough games. You know, they play Pittsburgh tomorrow night, a team that actually beat the Blues a few weeks ago. And Tristan Jarry, their goaltender, sort of had the Blues number. And then after that, they play the Avalanche on Saturday, which is obviously a very tough game. Then in Winnipeg, in Edmonton. So I don't think you can ever assume anything. So number one, they've got to get in. But the other part of it is, you know, you can't, you know, treat it like an on-off switch and say, well, you know, if the Blues have a couple games to go and they're in or whatever, you don't really let your guard down. You can't turn it off and on. And I think, you know, all the work that they put in and all the ground they've gained, I think the last thing they'll want to do is sort of go in cruise control and lose their game and their momentum, you know, because right now their momentum is tremendous. And, you know, a lot of people, it reminds them of 2019, and there are some similarities, of course, you know, coaching change and getting hot in the second half. And I don't think any team wants to play the Blues right now in the first round the way they're playing. So I don't think they want to let down. I don't think there will be a letdown. I'm not saying they're going to win the rest of their games, but I think they want to keep things the way they are right now.
He is John Kelly, the superb TV play-by-play broadcaster for the St. Louis Blues. He's on Twitter at JKellyHockey. John, thanks so much for taking some time with us tonight. We really appreciate it. Hopefully we can catch up every once in a while moving forward.
All right, Matt. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Very good. That's John Kelly joining us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line, and we appreciate him taking a few moments with us today as the team is, man, this is fun. I said this the other day. The last time I was this fired up about the Blues, It was when they played Colorado in the playoffs, when Jordan Binnington threw the water bottle and he got injured, and then like it felt like they were en route to winning against Colorado in that series. And since that moment, since that series ended, since the Blues were eliminated, there has been very little overly exciting about the Blues. And they are a completely different team and organization right now. They are so much fun. They're easy to root for. The games are compelling. You know what's a great feeling as a fan? You know what's a great feeling as a fan? When you're expecting, I want to use the word greatness, but just expecting positive things. Oh, you're down? That's fine. They'll get the equalizer. They'll score. They'll win it in overtime. Right now, you watch this team, and it's almost a surprise if something doesn't go right. It is such a wonderful feeling as a fan when you're so confident about your team that, and look, that can end really quickly. That can end really quickly. I don't know what it's going to look like in the postseason. I'm not making any assumptions either, but it feels really good right now. We'll jump back into Cardinals baseball talk. Our good friend Ryan Fagan, who's now part of the team over at Sports Hub STL, he joins us in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on K. I wish I just had more discipline in my life, because we get these text messages and it's under a certain category. And every time I read one on the air, I go, I can never read this a version of this text message again. I just can't do it. I cannot give the credibility of having this read over a radio station. I cannot do it. And then I see that text message again, and it just sucks me in, and I have to read it and oppose it vehemently. And then I'm going to feel really dirty in about 2 minutes because I read it on the air. And I'm going to say to myself, I'm never doing that again. And it's just a horrible cycle. It's a horrible cycle. Text message from the 314. Is there truth to the rumors that the DeWitts enjoy small crowds so they can cry no support and poor so they can move the team to Nashville? It's always Nashville.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's always Nashville. It's always Nashville. No. Okay. People who believe that, like, go to a doctor. Get yourself checked. This is, I don't think there is a sports host in this market who is more, like, accepting of opposing views than me. I take a lot of pride in that. I take a lot of pride in seeing the pathway that people take to get to their conclusion, even if I disagree with that conclusion. It is a crusade that I am on to lift up the overall discussion, discourse of everything that we do here, where we can at least understand what other people are saying. No, there's not any truth to that. It's like the dumbest thing that gets sent all the time. All the flipping time it gets sent. And it's the Nashville mayor, like, 3 months ago was like, yeah, we don't want Major League Baseball. We can't support Major League Baseball. That's the Nashville. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever heard a mayor being like, yeah, we don't want that really cool thing in our city. We can't support that. We can't. Nashville has a million buildings going up on a daily basis. They're like Las Vegas. You want something built? Snap your finger. The thing is built. And their mayor's like, yeah, we're not doing baseball. So that's the first thing. Second thing. Even with the Cardinals crowds and everything down this year, they're still going to be very respectable when it comes to attendance from a national, like, compared to other teams. They're printing money on everything that they've got going on there. They are still a profitable organization. They would not be that like 90% of Major League Baseball teams would trade their financial situation with the Cardinals' financial situation. Stop with this. Just stop. I am telling you it's not true. Just stop. And hopefully I never read a version of that text message. Maybe it's just one person who always hears me do the disclaimer. It's like, I'm going to get Paulie. I'm going to get him to get all fired up by bringing this up again. That's not very nice. Let's bring in Ryan Fagan. He is part of the team over at Sports Hub STL. He is a fantastic baseball writer. He's one of our favorite people. He's on Twitter, at Ryan Fagan. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Matt. Doing well. How are you?
I am good. It's good to be able to talk to you. What is your, like, general all-encompassing feeling after watching the Cardinals go 4-2 to start the season?
I think when you looked at this season, if you wanted to look hard enough, you could find reasons to be excited about the team, right? You could look at Lars Nootbaar and say, if this guy can stay healthy and kind of harness the skills that we've seen in pieces, he could be a really good player and a really good leadoff guy. You know, we saw what Victor Scott did this spring. You know, we saw what Mason Wynn did last year in his first season development. And we saw, like, flashes of Jordan Walker this spring. And so if you look at all those things, you say, you know what, they could actually be okay. This is the exact series that you wanted to see, right? I mean, obviously, because you look at it, you say, okay, well, they went 4-2, and Wilson Contreras and Mason Wynn didn't get a hit until that sixth game. So, you know, they must have been doing something right as a full team. And I think that's kind of the takeaway out of this series.
Yeah, I think we're all just still trying to figure out, like, what's real and what's not real. And obviously some of, like, the gaudy numbers here at the beginning of the season won't stay at that level. Right. But they've been can they be a legitimately good offensive club?
I mean, it looks like it, right? Because the thing is when you've looked at Cardinals teams sometimes in the past couple of years, you've looked at, there's been a couple of spots in that batting order, they're not going to get anything out of that spot, this spot, this spot. That's sometimes three or four spots in the order. Well, that's not the case this year, right? Because even some of those guys that struggled last year, you know, Jordan Walker and, you know, Nolan Gorman hasn't played a lot, but he's looked good when he's been in there. They have upside, right? There's, you know, Victor Scott looks like a completely different player this year. He, you know, I think they talked about on the broadcast today, Brad Thompson said something that the effect of, you know, he looks like he's not overwhelmed at the plate. You know, there are things like that that make you think that there's not just decent hitters, but there's upside at every single position during, you know, 1-9 in the lineup. But that's just not been the case for the most part of the last couple of years.
What do you make of Nolan Arenado? Because not only are the numbers are solid, he's hitting almost 400 in OPS at 1,100, couple doubles, a home run to start the season. He's driving in runs, coming up big in situations. But the underlying numbers are there as well. The bat speed is vastly improved, things like that. I'll keep asking you, is this sustainable question? But for Arenado, looking past the baseball card numbers, do you feel like what he did in the offseason might actually be to a point where, what we're seeing is some version of it, what he's going to be this year?
I think we're going to look at his baseball reference page in a couple of years, and you're going to look back at 2024 and you think, wow, what in the world happened? He's not that bad of a player. I think he's still got life left in the bat. And I think one of the things that's been most impressive so far is you've seen him go to the plate, and it feels like he has not to say he didn't have a game plan last year, right? But he's taking advantage of situations. There was in today's game where there was an opening in the right side of the infield. Then he hit a line drive through that opening, right? He went up there with the intent of, if the pitch is out there and I get the chance to take the ball that way, because it's going to drive in a run, that's what I'm going to try to do. And that's what he did. And I feel like there were so many times last year he'd be up there and, we talk about Victor Scott looking overwhelmed sometimes. Sometimes Nolan Arenado looked overwhelmed, and that's weird to say about a guy who's probably going to wind up in the Hall of Fame, but it was true. And so far this year, he's looked more like the Nolan Arenado of old. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to finish top five in the MVP like he has a couple times, but I really do think he's going to be significantly better than he was last year, which is not a super high bar for him to clear.
So that takes us to the next thing here, because the approach does seem to be good, and we're hearing some interesting things out of the clubhouse. I think it was Victor Scott the other day who said, Brant Brown says sometimes it's time to be a hit collector. Sometimes you got to go out there and slug. It feels like to me, and I think this is the point that you were just making, it feels like the approach at the plate is better situationally, where, like Arenado today, he doesn't need to hit a home run. He doesn't need to hit double. He just needs to get that thing through the hole that's out there.
Right.
It just feels a little bit more like there is a plan for almost everybody.
Right. I think that's true. And I think that's especially true with a guy like Arenado, because, you can look at the other guys and think, okay, well, it's another year of development, right? I mean, for Jordan Walker, he's still young. It's another year of development. Mason Wynn's still young. It's a year of development. Victor Scott's still young. I think in some cases, when you look at baseball as a whole, we have seen guys push to the major leagues much quicker than they had been in the past. And in some cases, they've thrived. But you look at Jackson Chourio last year with the Brewers. And in the first, month? He was
terrible.
He looked like he wasn't good. Yeah, that's the word. There you go. I didn't want to say it. But after that, he was great, right? It took him a while to adjust. And, I think last year with the Cardinals, the guys didn't get a chance to do that, right? Victor Scott came up, struggled, was sent down. Jordan Walker came up, struggled, was sent down. Nolan Gorman, it seemed like he never got a chance to get out of the funk, whether it was, in his own head or whatever it was. But it didn't happen. But you see these guys get a chance to take a break in the off season, in the case of Victor Scott, really, especially him, really mentally focused on what he needs to do. The story of Scott and his notebook that he carries around is just fascinating.
Have you seen the notebook?
I've not seen it.
Okay.
I asked him a lot about it at the winter warm-up, but it's fascinating
to
me.
He showed it to me the other day. It was me and Frank Cusimano at his locker 2 days ago, and he pulled it out and showed it. And the thing that he has it color-coded with sticky notes, and let's say he has an entire section devoted just to Tony Gwynn. This is what I've learned from Tony Gwynn. He has another section completely devoted to Brett Butler, another one to Vince Coleman, another one to Willie McGee. So that's how he organizes it. He organizes it by what he learns from the different players that he studies. It's incredible.
That's amazing. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, when he talked about that at the winter warm-up, that's one of those things in your mind. You're like, okay, make a note of that, because that's different.
Yeah.
Right? That's a guy who is seriously focused and determined and doing things he needs to do to make himself better, because it's not just recognizing your weaknesses, which he did, but it's going out and seeking actively on your own, not just being fed information, but actively going out and searching it, finding examples that you can follow and mimic And I love hearing stuff like that. I mean, because and I think you've seen it so far, but that's when we talk about a year of maturation. He would have never known to do that coming into last year. And I think the guys who have who make the adjustments and survive and thrive in the big leagues are the ones who use every year to grow and get better. And it seems so far that that's really happening with a lot of the Cardinals' young players.
You guys are rocking it over at Sports Hub STL. Give our listeners a little bit of an idea of what you guys have going on from a baseball content perspective and what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been so much fun. You know, I mean, I'm not nearly as heavily involved as some of the other people, but the moment I heard about it, I was like, oh, this is something I definitely want to be part of. But, you know, it was cool. I mean, watching the game today, and as it's ending, my first thought was, hey, let's see what the guys at the Cardinals 365 show are going to talk about. So let's do that. And, you know, I was tuning in, waiting in the countdown as it says 5 minutes away, 4 minutes away, you know, and then Brendan Schaefer and Randy Carricker did a great job. You know, so I think that's the kind of thing that they want. You saw all the comments, the interactions with the listeners on YouTube, and that's kind of the goal, is to get everybody just talking about it. You know, and not going to lie, it certainly helps if the Cardinals are better, mm-hmm. right? Because then people get excited. So, you know, I think it's been a lot of fun to see the reaction and see the way that people are talking about it so far early in this thing.
He is Ryan Fagan, great St. Louis-based baseball writer, now part of the team at Sports Hub STL. Follow him on Twitter, at Ryan Fagan. Ryan, always great to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, it's great. Thanks, Matt.
You bet. That's Ryan Fagan joining us here on the program. He's one of my favorite people out there covering the sport of baseball. And the more he can do for the different places that he's at, baseball is better for it. So I'm glad that he's been able to land and be part of the team over at Sports Hub STL. We've still got a lot coming up on the program today. Again, Earl Austin Jr., he's going to join us in about a half hour or so. We'll talk with him about some of these players that are incoming to SLU. And also, we'll try to put a bow on the SLU basketball season now that there's been a little bit of time between the end of the season coming to an end. How do we view what was Josh Schertz's first year at the helm of the program? That's going to be coming up at about 7:20. Mostly Cardinals baseball before then. We've gotten a lot of other messages. We've got some messages during the extra inning show today that I promised that I would get to on Sports Open Line. So we'll do that all coming up over the next half hour or so. Give you an opportunity to chime in on what's going on with the Cardinals. That's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. You are with us today. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line. Got you for just a few minutes left here in hour number one of the program. In hour number two, Earl Austin Jr. will join us. We'll talk some Billikens basketball. Might talk a little City SC as well. They're having a hard time scoring goals right now, so we'll talk with that. Our guy Matthew Rocchio is in studio with us today, and he does a lot of City stuff for the Sports Hub STL folks. So we'll talk with him coming up probably around 7:35 or so. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we're talking about, call, text, tweet 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. A couple comments I wanted to get to. So I was saying earlier that, like, this season for the Cardinals has just been fun. It's been fun. All the games have been fun. And I got a text message from the 314 that said, those two losses, not too much fun. Like, you know what? The act of losing, those games coming to an end and being on the wrong side of the score on a night where you felt like the Cardinals could have won, sure, that's not fun. But when you get into those games and some of the things that happened in those games, yeah, it was fun. Yesterday, Cardinals score a run in the eighth inning to force extras. That's fun. They get down by three in the top of the 10th, go to the bottom of the 10th, and they pull themselves off the mat, and they do it. They tie it up to force an 11th. That's fun. Like, so that's the point that I'm making. The you can't, like, retroactively allow your enjoyment of a game be based off the result of the game. If you sit there for 3 hours and it's an entertaining game and you're enjoying watching it, and then the game ends and your team lost, you can't say, well, that 3 hours sucked. Like, that isn't how it worked. So it's been enjoyable to watch this team play baseball. And am I drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit right now? Probably. Like, I tend to be somebody that sees the positives in just about everything. And my life is better when the Cardinals are good. I think all of our lives are better when the Cardinals are good. Is there anything that more like dictates how we feel in the city of St. Louis than the Cardinals being good? You want to be at the grocery store and the Cardinals just had a great win the night before and somebody's walking down the aisle with a Cardinals hat and you can like have that quick interaction with them about how great it was last night. Like, this city is so much more fun to live in when the Cardinals are good, and they've been fun for the first six games. Hopefully that keeps on going. We got a lot more coming up. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Into hour number two of the program, it's a Graybar Sports Open Line. We're going to have a lot of Sports Open Line over the next few days. Again, full shows tomorrow and also coming up on Friday. So I'll be excited to be able to bring that to you. Special love to all the people who are watching us on the video stream. Since we've gone FM, we've kind of doubled down on what we're doing from a video standpoint. We had started that with the Gas House Gang, which was a video-only program for a while, though we would play a replay of it at night here on KMOX. But in terms of it being live, it was only on video, and then that led to Gas House Gang being part of our normal lineup and Redbird Rush Hour and Sports Open Line. And we're doing, for those of you who do want to remind you, if you are looking for reaction to the Cardinals game after every game, the Extra Inning Show. We have it on KMOX, but we're also now putting that on the video stream as well with a chance for you to be able to react. So that's part of the recommitment, I guess you can say, to what we're doing from a video standpoint in addition to what we've done on the radio and being available to you on FM at 104.1 in addition to continuing to be with you on 1120. That's probably been the number one question I've gotten since we've jumped to 104.1 FM. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, does that mean 1120 is going away? No, 1120 is not going away. It is still there. We love the 50,000 watts. We love the 44 stations that or 44 states, I should say, that can hear us at night. We love all of that. So for those of you listening on 1120, we love you just as much as we love the folks who are listening on 104.1. If you're in, though, the St. Louis metro area, you might want to switch over to 104.1. You might want to, what does this sound like on FM? Because I think, you know, listening to, I got to the ballpark just a little bit late today. I was there after first pitch. And so I got to listen to John and Ricky a little bit as I was driving in on the FM. And it sounded beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I wanted to go through just a few messages that we got. Some of them came during the Extra Inning Show today. Anytime we do the Extra Inning Show on a weekday day game, we'll save a lot of the comments for Sports Open Line. So if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Got a text message from the 573 about today's game. Really good win. I like how the Cardinals battled back after they got down 5-3. I think Ali left Sonny in way too long when Maton was ready in the bullpen. I wouldn't say way too long. I do think he left him in one batter too long. And this is one of those things where you understand like why the decision is made, and it's made for legitimate reasons. So Oliver Marmol leaves Sonny Gray in, A, because the bullpen was just absolutely depleted today and you were trying to get more out of your starting pitcher than you normally would because you didn't know if you had enough in the bullpen to make it through the entire game, and B, because you trust Gray. Those are both really legitimate reasons. If you can't like acknowledge the fact that those are legitimate reasons, I think you're being colored by your general dislike slash hate towards the manager, because those are legitimate reasons. But you know what? There's also legitimate reasons to not have Sonny Gray stay in. If you go into the game today and Phil Maton's going to be your ninth inning guy, which was kind of what the plan was, and then the game has come to an inflection point where you feel like you got to get Maton up in the seventh because of where this game is going, the moment you get him warming in the bullpen, I would argue, if you're going to use him in the seventh inning, use him in the seventh inning when it matters. So I would have taken Gray out because Maton was ready in that situation. And again, it's not the ninth inning, it's the seventh inning. Make sure you get the most out of his day. And Maton came in one, you know, after the grand slam had been hit. The other side of it is we've spent a lot of time here talking recently about the fact that Gray was kind of behind the other pitchers because of just health and everything. And if he's a little bit behind and he's already somebody who's not exactly known as being a big-time innings, big-time, you know, throwing a ton of pitches per game guy, and he's already approaching 90 pitches, that seemed like kind of the time to get him out of there. Now, as a manager, you do want to listen to your veteran. If you go out there to find out how he's doing and he convinces you to stay in, I guess you listen. At the same time, more often than not, I think managers should have their decision made before they even walk out there. So it was an interesting decision. I'm not overly upset about it. Again, I think the reasons that Ali used, the motivations for why he kept Sonny in the game, I think they are legitimate reasons. I wouldn't discount those. But at the same time, the reasons I would have taken Sonny out at that moment and gone to Phil Maton, I think those reasons also legitimate. To me, those kind of outweigh the other side. Let's grab a couple phone calls. Ed has given us a call. Hey, Ed, you are on Sports Open Line.
Hey, first of all, I've been going to Cardinal games since the 50s, and I enjoy the game. I always tell people, go for the game, not the victory, because you'll be disappointed too many times. And just as you said earlier, they're playing some exciting ball. I like the kids. The kids are all right, and the veterans are buying into it. So I agree with that. But here's my complaint, though. The new scoreboard is terrible. It is just terrible. It has too much information on there. The lettering, the numbering is too small. They don't have both teams' lineups up at the same time. There's no place that shows any other game scores.
They're out in left field now, but not on the right field board.
Yeah, no. They don't have the out-of-town scores.
Yeah, they do. Out in left field, they do.
Haven't seen that. I've been there to two games.
I've been there every game. They got them out in left field.
Where? Left field.
I mean, I just look up out in left field and I see them. Like, I can't even like tell you off the top. I just know if I want to know what a score is, I look out to left field and I see all the scores.
No, they're not there. And they don't have the information that they used to have about batters coming up. And they don't have both lineups. And they've got statistics up there that nobody really gives a damn about. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just silly. And for pitchers, you just want to know what he threw, how fast it was, what his pitch count is. And they've got too much stuff. I think the new scoreboard is terrible. As my 26-year-old son said, get the nerds out of that room and get back to baseball. So that's my thoughts.
All right, Ed, I appreciate the call. I don't know if there's ever been a call that I've disagreed with more than that. Like, I'm not going to argue on that one. And here's the thing. I totally understand where he's coming from. I actually, for somebody who's not into analytics and the way baseball players are evaluated nowadays, I 100% understand why you look up at that scoreboard and there's a lot of stuff up there that you don't understand and you don't even want to see. I understand that. But I can't, me personally, oh my gosh, I love that scoreboard. I love it so much. All the information they have, I think it's amazing. I also think it's important to help educate baseball fans. You want to know how players are being evaluated. And seeing some of that stuff up there, that's part of it. That helps you understand why decisions are being made. This player's good. This player's not so good. Things like that. When I was in Milwaukee, they took average off the board and put OPS up. And fans, I would get calls just like that on my Brewers postgame show about people complaining that they didn't see average, they saw OPS. There's some good people who don't like it. I get it. I love it. It might not be your cup of tea. I understand it. I get it. But I love it. I love what they've done with the scoreboard. I think it is fantastic. We're going to grab one more quick phone call. We got to get to Earl Austin Jr. in just a moment. So, Curtis, I just have a quick moment for you, but you're on Sports Open Line.
Hey, Matt. I got a comment to make.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
I listened to the two games the other night whenever the Cardinals didn't win, but they was exciting to listen to because the team did not shut down. They did not give up. They tried to make a comeback and they tried to win, and that's the exciting part whenever you got a young team like that. And it's great to listen to Rick and
John. Yeah,
John. do the announcement, because that was exciting.
Great stuff, Curtis. Yeah, thank you. I'm right there with you. I think it's been a really fun, exciting brand of baseball we've seen through the first six games with the Cardinals. We'll talk some college basketball with Earl Austin Jr. He's up next. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us here on the program. Talking mostly baseball, but we'll talk a little college basketball right now. The SLU basketball season, it's a couple weeks over. Got to a little bit of postseason this year. Wasn't a great postseason run for them, going on the road and getting beat pretty good. But the first year of the Josh Schertz era, it is officially in the books. And let's bring on our friend. He is the analyst on the SLU basketball broadcast that you hear right here on KMOX. He is the great Earl Austin Jr. He joins us right now. Earl, always great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm fine, Matt. How are you today?
Doing all right. Always enjoy being able to get your thoughts on all things basketball, specifically with SLU. And just starting off with this, we're a little bit removed now from the season coming to an end. I got to think you've spent some time kind of reflecting on what we saw in the first year of the Josh Schertz era. What stands out, and what kind of progress and steps forward did this team take in this first year under Schertz?
Well, I think the main thing is we brought the crowds back to Chaffetz Arena. As you saw in conference, we all got off to a good start. And then that game against VCU in January, it was close to sell out. Then the next game against Dayton, then down the stretch. So folks started to come out, student sections filled. Folks are excited about going to Billiken basketball. And I think that was one of the main things, recreating that buzz again, even though the results were up and down throughout the season. We had injuries and stuff like that. But the fact that I think we created a little buzz and getting the crowds back and creating some excitement at Chaffetz Arena, and I think it helped us down the stretch get some big wins there. So I think that's a big development, I think. And I think that bodes well for our future.
Yeah, I was just talking about this earlier with the Cardinals. I said the city of St. Louis is so much more fun to live in when the Cardinals are playing well because everybody unites. In many ways, the Billikens are kind of the same. That's another program that when things are going well and you're out around town the next day after a big win the night before, everybody is talking about it. And that's something that we haven't seen so much. And it got back to that a little bit to your point this past year.
I think so. It really did. I start with that VCU game. That was a big win over the big dog in the conference. And the following week, the game against Dayton, although we lost, but then Duquesne game, we had a great comeback on senior night, the Loyola game. We set records shooting the basketball that night. So it you could just see the crowd was just juiced throughout that game. And I think it's just going to continue to get better throughout the Josh Schertz era. It's off to a good start. Like I said, I think we had a lot of solid success. I think injuries really curtailed us from being the best team that we could have possibly been this year. Losing Kellen Thames basically after six games really hurt us. And then we lost Larry to the portal. And then we lost a couple other four rotation players total. So we really had to recalibrate our season and really played some freshmen who really weren't going to play a lot. But then Amari McCautry did a nice job and emerged. And then Dylan Warlett, you saw him, who was going to be a redshirt, gave us some bright minutes. So they got some valuable experience. And I think you saw Josh, how he was able to change on the fly. You know, people look at the Josh Schertz team, shoot a lot of threes, ball movement, backdoors, pretty basketball. But we won a lot of games by just being grimy, playing solid defense, and kids showing a lot of resilience. You know how many times we were down 6-7 points going in the last 3-4 minutes of the game, and they found a way to win. That happened at least 4 or 5 times throughout the season, and so that showed a lot of mental toughness and fortitude, which you need to win in a quality league like the A-10. So I think that was something that was cool to see this year.
A lot of times when you bring in a new coach, there's a lot of promises and commitments that need to be made. And one of those things for SLU was, I think they were already punching above their weight from an NIL perspective, but they pushed that even further. Are they positioned, do you feel like, in a really good spot now, just based off the money that is available that you need in today's world of college basketball?
I think in our own little world of the Atlantic 10 mid-majors, I think they're in a solid position. Obviously, we're not where, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC and some of those conferences are throwing seven figures around. That's high rent territory, but I think we're in a pretty solid spot to have the success. And obviously, you look at the quality of the arena, the facility, the conference is good, good coach and everything. There's a lot that St. Louis U has going for it that we can have some success, I think.
Let's get to a couple of the new players that are coming in, because they're going to work through the portal. And Paul Tieno, a guy who was played for Quinnipiac, so he played against SLU this past year, had 19 points and 10 rebounds in what turned into just an absolutely crazy game at Chaffetz back on November 25th. He reportedly has committed to the program. What do you like about him, and how good of a fit is he with the Billikens?
Paul's a really nice fit, and he did. He had a big game against us. Now, he's a guy that at that four spot, he can really provide a good complement to Robbie as well, because he could score. Like, he could score in the post when Robbie goes to stretch the floor from the five, or he could step out and hit the occasional three-pointer. He's a good lob threat. He's good on the pick and roll. But also, he plays with a strong motor. He's a good rebounder, and he averaged 2 blocks a game. And he gives you that size and physicality at 6'8", 230, which you need to compete in the A-10 against VCU, Dayton, George Mason, teams like that. So, you needed another good big. You got Robbie coming back, Kalu coming back, and some young bigs on the way. So I think he was a great addition. I watched him in his high school days back in the AAU, played for some buddies of mine at the 816 varsity club, and I was impressed with him then. That was 4 years ago. So now here you are as a grown man coming in, very impressed, and a good fit. I think that's the main thing. He's a good fit and a good quality player.
We're talking with our friend Earl Austin Jr., Quinton Jones, a transfer from Northern Illinois. Hey, you look at his line and his stats. Led the team in scoring at about 17 points per game, 35% on three-pointers, going to go get you 5 rebounds per game. He had over 100 assists. He played a ton. You don't take him out of the game. I mean, this is if he can put up those kind of numbers, he's a fill-up-the-box-score, make-an-impact kind of guy.
Well, that's the thing. You know, playing for a team that wasn't as strong, you have to multitask quite a bit. So he's a scorer. Like you say, he can score at three levels, can catch and shoot it, but he had to do some ball handling. He had to do some playmaking. He had to do some rebounding. He had to play some defense. So he had to probably do a lot of things to try to help his team win when your talent level isn't as strong. So I think that helps him as an all-around player. So being 6'5", with good athleticism and the ability to shoot it and create a shot off the dribble, I think is going to be a good fit. You know, you're replacing a lot of firepower on that perimeter, obviously, with Gibson and the Swope Show graduating. So I think he's a big step towards helping to fill that void as well in that spot on the perimeter.
He's a Chicago kid, and obviously Chicago's just up the road. Is that an area where maybe SLU can do even better? Because we all know that from a talent standpoint, there's very few cities that produce as many high-level college basketball players as the city of Chicago.
Well, I think, you know, Robbie Avila, you know, who we got through Indiana State, is from that area. Obviously, Quinton comes in there in the past. You know, we've had, you know, during our last great era, you know, you had Mike McCall, Dwayne Evans from that Chicago area. So, yeah, you can, yeah, not only whether it's from the city, the suburbs, the Catholic schools or whatever, there's a lot of talent in that area. But in this era of the portal, you can get them from anywhere and everywhere, you know, because a lot of times, you know, you're recruiting high school kids, but I think everybody's priority now is getting experienced kids from the portal first or junior college, and then you get high school kids. I know Coach Schertz really values high school kids. He's recruited 3 last year, and he's recruited 3 more quality kids this year. So he doesn't forsake the high school recruiting, but you know, you got to have the portal too if you're going to, and that experience if you're going to succeed.
Unfortunately, it's such a gamble, Earl, because if you recruit a high school kid and he doesn't play very much just because he's not ready, as opposed to waiting to be ready, he'll hop into the portal and go somewhere else, and you just spent a year and a scholarship and a roster spot on a kid that you were developing for another program. So there's some danger in bringing in a high school kid who maybe you're not going to be able to give as much playing time as they want.
Oh yeah, it's different to roll it out. It's a double-edged sword, like you said. Either he may not play a lot, and He may go someplace where he can get some opportunity, or he may play a lot, blow up, and they come and get him anyway. So, but I know one thing: they're big on player development. The coaching staff is big on player development, and I think that's why I've said that when this portal started to hit, I think it's going to be important to have people on your staff who I think player development is going to be huge for the staff, because you're going to lose maybe a good young player. So you got to have people who can develop people to take his place. First, you're going to go in the portal, but then you're going to recruit other people, because you may lose that kid in possibility. That's got to be in the back of your mind. So you got to have that next guy in place and develop him as well. So I think that's kind of how they've strategically recruited these last two freshman classes that I've seen. There's guys of like size, like ability. So I think that's something to watch. And I think these guys really take their player development very seriously.
Finish you off with this. Do you have any predictions when it comes to the Final Four and who's going to be the last team standing this year?
Oh, man, it's going to be so good. I'm looking at Duke right now in Florida. But like you said, when you got four number one seeds who are all powerful, you can make a case for any four of them. But, I kind of got Duke. It's funny because when Duke's been dominating, basically, while Florida has really kind of been in a couple of fistfights to get where they've gotten, trailing the UConn game, obviously the Texas Tech game, and both of them going to have, Auburn and Houston are just as capable of winning. But that's who I have right now.
Earl Austin Jr., it's always great to be able to talk with him, all things basketball, SLU basketball. It won't be that long till he is back on with Bob Ramsey right here on KMOX. The season's not that far away, even though this year's college basketball season is not officially over quite yet. Earl, thanks for the time. I'm sure we'll catch up again down the line.
Anytime, you can call me. Take it easy now.
Awesome, very good. That's Earl Austin Jr. joining us here on the program. Love talking basketball with Earl Austin Jr. and appreciate him being with us today. We'll talk a little City SC soccer. We'll jump back into the Cardinals. We got a little bit to do here before we get out of here at 8 o'clock tonight. Don't go anywhere. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. On KMOX is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We are with you until 8 o'clock tonight. I believe we have a replay of the Gas House Gang at 8 o'clock, and that leads me to tell you this. Every Tuesday, 12 to 12:30, Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol is going to be on the Gas House Gang with Ronj and Tom and Bernie. If you didn't hear/watch the first version of it, it was really good because it's a half hour. It's not the 7-minute post-game press conference where the game just got over and it's the heat of the moment and writers are on deadline and Ollie, if they lost, is maybe a little bit annoyed about things and you got to talk quick. That's not the environment for conversation. That's the environment for just question and answers. And sometimes I think when people are judgmental of Ollie, I think to myself, well, they only see him during the post-game press conference. There's a lot more to this dude than that. So that's why I'm happy that he's going to be doing this 12 to 12:30. I'm not saying this to pump him up. What I am saying is it's going to be a chance for you to ask questions of him. And something happened on that conversation the other day that I think is really notable. So I'm going to open up the curtain for you a little bit here. When we're doing the video stuff, we use something called StreamYard. It's a very common thing. A lot of people use it to put video content out there. That's how we do the video version of it. And the interface, you see comments and everything. So there's two areas for comments. One is a private chat. So what that is just people who, when we were doing Gas House Gang, if Drew, our producer, needed to tell us something, he would type something in the private chat and then all four of us in four different spots could see it. And then there's the public comment area. So that's where if you leave a comment on our video thing, we see it and we can respond to it. So Ollie obviously had only the private chat open when he was doing it the other day. And he didn't see the comments that were coming in. And then at the very end of the conversation, he clicked on it, on the comments, and he saw everything. And he said something along the lines of, oh, I didn't see all these comments. I was just on the private chat. Now, I didn't see what was on the comments. I can only imagine there are probably some things there that if I'm Oliver Marmol, I don't want said about me, but that man's got a thick skin, and he's heard it all, and he can handle it. I think he, listening to him in that moment, I actually think he was excited about the fact that he saw the questions and the comments from people, and that's going to be a forum for him to explain. One of the things I love about him is he loves talking about baseball, and he loves being challenged. I don't agree. Look, in the last few days, how many things have I disagreed with him on? I disagreed with Sonny Gray being left in today. I disagreed with Mason Wynn being allowed to hit the other day for himself when he had Gorman on the bench. I feel like there was something yesterday that I disagreed with. Or was yesterday the Gorman? Anyways, there's things that I disagree with him. He has zero problem being challenged on those things, and I'm excited for you, the listeners, you, the Cardinal fans, that you're going to be able to send these comments in, and he's going to be able to address things. And I hope you take that opportunity, and I'm confident that he's going to take the opportunity to answer some of those questions. So that's really, really good. Our producer tonight is Matthew Rocchio, who you hear and see over at Sports Hub STL, doing a lot of stuff, including coverage of City SC. They are going to be back at it. They've got a they've got a big rivalry matchup coming up this weekend when they take on Sporting KC, who just made a change. Like Peter Vermes, is that how you say his last? Okay, yeah. Got that right. Legendary coach. He's out, and they're moving forward. But it hasn't been around that long. But this rivalry between these two teams is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's an absolute blast, and you know the fans here in St. Louis have a lot of fun. The players, inexplicably over the last few years, have gotten involved in it because I think some of the Europeans don't understand how the naming convention works here, and so they just call it Sporting Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans of Sporting Kansas City hate being called just Sporting Kansas because obviously the team's in Missouri. And so there's a lot of fun things with that one, and obviously the dead cat bounce from firing your coach. If you're a City fan, that's the last thing you want to see.
It is. Were you surprised they made that change?
Now, a little bit, because the turn had just happened so fast, and it's so early in the season. And to your point, he is a club legend there, so you expect them to have a longer leash, maybe let him get into April to really try to figure things out. But I do think that potentially getting kind of steamrolled by City at home, maybe like 2-0 or 3-0, would have been an absolutely even worse way for him to go out. And so I think maybe you lock in on the mutual part of them parting terms, apparently, and maybe that was the discussion of like, okay, this is not the last game I want it to be, and so on and so forth.
But he pops up again at some point. He can't be done. He's a relatively young guy.
Soccer's a lot like hockey, where it's just like you just if a guy gets fired, just wait 2 years. You will eventually see something on your phone pop up of he's taking another job.
Well, I mean, Bradley Carnell is having a lot of success already with Philadelphia. So,
yes, he is.
It doesn't take long for you to get another job. This City team is not scoring goals right now. They have not scored in their last two matches. They only have one goal in their last three. So you go back to that LA, that Galaxy were just, they were in a bad spot, and they scored those three goals. And like, I'm not trying to cherry pick things, but obviously they were going against a team that was kind of undermanned.
Mm-hmm.
If you remove that, they have scored one goal so far this year.
And that was the run of play. That was from a free kick.
Yeah.
So take away that run against the Galaxy. They have not scored a goal from the run of play. And credit to Olof Mellberg. He solved the issues from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Defense was bad. And more importantly, and part of the defense being bad is they were terrible with the ball at their feet in the back end. Well, they're fine with the ball at their feet in the back end. They're fine with the ball at their feet for the most part. You can criticize a little bit in the midfield. The problem is they forget how to play the sport when they get the ball within 25 yards of the goal, which is usually a critical part to scoring goals, is knowing what you're doing when you're that close to the goal. And that's been their problem. Nothing has worked. They can't break down set in defenses against Austin. And I know there's a lot of fans out there who are getting a little bit miffed by the lineup decisions. One of your designated players, João Klaus, has been coming off the bench the last few games, and I know that's been bothering a lot of people.
What's your takeaway on that?
I think that Klaus, listen, when he's not scoring goals, it's hard to keep playing a nine. And so you want to change things up there. But I think undoubtedly the impact he had on the game when he's come off the bench the last two games, the impact he had in that Seattle game where he was winning the ball out on the perimeter and then dribbling and then creating things from there, his ability to win headers and create from different parts of the field as a presser. He's also really good. I think Klaus makes the team better, but I understand why there's a new coach who's saying, I got other strikers who potentially can score for me. I'm going to give them a chance, and I respect that from Melberg.
Do we need to start changing kind of how we view Klaus? Because I feel like almost like the legend of him, and he's the last name only guy, and he came in and he was the face of the organization, him and Berkey in that first year, and was really, really good. But yeah, obviously last year did not go well. He had injuries. He did not produce. Starts this year, not a whole lot of production. Like, the dude's job is to score goals, and he hasn't scored a goal for a really, really long time. Is this something where he can be the guy that he's viewed at, or has it changed a little bit?
I think he can, and that's because, you know, I don't try to get stuck in the numbers too much, but I do, one thing I am very religious about it is I try to stick with process and not just results. And finishing is one of the most kind of volatile aspects when you talk about anything in sports, about focusing on the process and not the result, which is the process is that João Klaus finds himself in the correct areas. He's in the box. He's finding the holes in the defense. He's making himself available for shots the way you want a striker to do it. But the problem is that his finishing is one of the worst at the positions in the league over the last year.
Why is that?
I think that finishing is an extremely volatile stat overall. You look at the best strikers in the world, and I think this is all you also see with shooting percentage in hockey if you want to localize it a little bit more. It's just that this is a number that shifts wildly from year to year. And I just think that focusing on finishing and scoring goals for a striker gets you in the weeds. Are they getting in the right spots? Are they making themselves available? João Klaus does that. It's just that he can't get the monkey off his back right now. And I think there's a balance. I think we're seeing this with the Cardinals, Wilson Contreras, Mason Wynn. How much is it of it giving other players a chance versus reinforcing the confidence in a player who's stuck in a rut?
Yeah, and look, I do the same thing with baseball, because I'll talk, you know, a guy is hitting the ball really hard, but he doesn't have anything to show for it. And I'm sure people get sick of me talking about, hey, that was 107 off the bat, but it was right at somebody. That was a really good sign. You know, you can't look at the box score. You can't always look at the baseball card numbers. This stuff's going to come around. It's all going to even out. Like, those are words that come out of my mouth over and over and over. That being said, there is a line that you cross. Like, it's at some point in time, you can talk about a guy hitting the ball hard as much as you want to talk about it, but it's hard to always identify where that line is. But finally, you get to this line where you cross and you're like, yeah, he's hitting it hard, but he's got nothing to show for it. It's time to try something else.
And I think that might have been Olaf Melberg's line, you know, a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, I'll let you be the punch off the bench, but the goal's got to come off the bench, and until it does, I'm not giving you, you know, a full 60, a full 90. By the way, we will get more City Talk. Gen C's coming up next with the City Spotlight.
Okay, so it's not. I knew that. I should write things down. Generally on Wednesday nights.
I didn't want people turning it off.
No,
that was my thing. Sorry.
Jen's up next. That's awesome. Generally on Wednesdays, we have like Bernie Miklas on. Mm-hmm. We're going to have him on tomorrow. I didn't know it was Wednesday. Bernie texted me like, am I on today? And like, we had people booked. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what day. This is what happens to me during the baseball season. I lose track of what day it is. I never know what day it is.
The day it is, is there a game today?
Yeah.
Is there no game today? Well, that's a day. The day is an off day is a day, and then there's an on day, and those are the 2 days in baseball season.
That's my life, and it's been that way for you. I can't, you know, because I did 10 years of minor league baseball play-by-play, and then I was with the Brewers, and now I'm here doing Cardinal stuff. From the moment I got into baseball, during the baseball season, I do not know what day it is. It is terrible for, like, scheduling. I can't tell you, like, how many times somebody, like, are you going to be at that tomorrow? No, that's on Thursday. Yeah, that's tomorrow. I don't know what day it is. It's day game. That's all I know.
Exactly. So,
yes, Jen is up next because it's Wednesday, and I was informed by my wonderful boss, Steve Moore, earlier in the week that, yes, Jen has a City Spotlight on Wednesday at 8 o'clock. He told me that, and then I'm talking to you about Gas House Gang being on 8 o'clock. It's not Gas House Gang. It's City Spotlight. It's Jen, and you know what? She's out there. I'm going to try to grab her to come on this final segment. We'll do that in just a moment. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Don't forget to be tuned in. Redbird Rush Hour, 5 o'clock every weekday. My myself and Kevin Wheeler. Gas House Gang, 12 noon every weekday. Tomorrow will be the last Gas House Gang of the week, though, because the Cardinals... Wait, maybe that's not right. Hold on. What time do the Cardinals play in Boston on I know it's a day game now. All of a sudden, it popped in my head. Is that a 3 o'clock game or is that a 1 o'clock game? I think it's a 1 o'clock game. I'm looking. I think I was right. I get in my head.
Cardinals
play
at 1:10.
Okay, see, I was right, and I got in my head on things being wrong. Yeah, so there's not going to be a Gas House Gang on Friday. I was right originally. I just can't do anything right. Okay, let's stop talking about me. Jen Cease is here, and she's going to be on from 8 o'clock on tonight for City Spotlight. Hey, Jen.
Yeah, hey. You sound like me trying to figure out the MLS schedule this year with where the guys are, what time zone they're on, and then sometimes those occasional Sunday games that are, you know, midday games.
I love the Sunday night soccer.
Yeah.
That has been the only time this year where I've been able to sit down from start to finish and watch the match.
That's a fair point because it's earlier in the day.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit more family friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to keeping my kids out late anymore, but I also have 4, so I'm over that.
So yeah, the Sunday super afternoon is a little tougher, but that Sunday night soccer, the one they had a couple weeks, I guess it was against LA Galaxy, right? That was the one they did on Sunday night?
Yeah, that one was a 3-something, I think.
Okay,
right?
Whenever it was. I like the Sunday night soccer.
Yeah.
So I'm in favor of Apple doing as many of those as possible because it works for my schedule. And Jen, it's all about me.
Yeah, you get 2 kids. It's keep it about you as much as possible.
What do you have coming up on the program tonight?
Yeah, so of course we'll highlight a player profile, which is Conrad Vollum. So he's really interesting. Got to talk to him today. No audio from Coach Olaf Melberg. We'll hear from him just tomorrow. So I have a special guest. His name, if you follow some soccer, you follow some podcasts, you probably follow the Soccer Dad Pod, and one of the culprits is here. JV Anderson will be joining me for the entire hour.
Yeah, JB, I think anybody who follows along with Jen has certainly seen the Soccer Dad podcast, and seems to be growing on its own.
Well, we have a lot of kids, and stickers are cheap, so guerrilla marketing has been brilliant.
There you go.
But St. Louis is the gift that keeps on giving when it comes to the game, because no matter where you go, you're going to run into somebody that played at some level and excelled at another level, or has kids in the mix, and
Matt has one now.
Yeah, and they don't know what to do. So it's we're equal parts therapy, history, and soccer pop culture.
My oldest played her first year of soccer this past year, so it was Saturday mornings going and watching her run around and be scared of a soccer ball and then tell me how much she absolutely loved it. So,
that is 100% normal.
Okay.
Am I right?
Picking daisies.
There you go. That's what's coming up next. City Spotlight, thanks so much for being tuned in. I got you tomorrow beginning at 5 o'clock right here on KMOX.